Broadcasting.
Thank you. Welcome, everyone. I apologize for the delay. It was because of technical problems, but I will call the Senate Finance and Revenue Committee to order, and we will begin by calling the roll.
Senator Finley.
Finley present by video.
Senator Riley.
Present by video.
Senator Wagner.
Present by video.
Vice Chair Boquist.
Present by audio.
Madam Chair Burdick.
Present by video. Okay, we have two public hearings on our schedule today, and we will start off by opening a public hearing on Senate Bill 864. I think that would be Mazin.
Yes, Madam Chair, members of the committee, Mazin Malik, Legislative Revenue Office. Senate Bill 864 is a bill that deals with local marijuana taxation. Marijuana taxation. I'm hearing echo. Is that anywhere? It's probably me only. All right. So the marijuana taxation in House Bill 2041 during the 2015 session was changed to a point of sale tax. The original Measure 91, if you recall, that legalized the marijuana commercial and taxation was a per ounce, $35 per ounce tax. House Bill 2041 changed that to 17% for the state. And it also allowed local governments to levy and impose 3% tax if they act on it, if they have an ordinance to do so. Now, this bill attempts or allows the local governments to increase that tax from 3% to a maximum of 10%. So it's a permissive bill. And then there is a dash one amendment. And the dash one amendment does not change that level of taxation. It still is at 10%. However, it mandates that if a city goes into that changes the tax, that at least 20% of the proceeds of the tax collected shall be transferred to the county which the city is located in. And I think the language deals with only the new increment of the tax, not the whole 10%. But if it has 3%, then it goes above that. That's what I believe the amendment does. And just to give you an idea where the local taxes are, taxes, state taxes that are collected in general, the whole, if the state collects the 17%, it collects about 133, 135, and that's growing. Next year, we expected about 150. In 2020, local taxes for those cities and counties that levy the 3% tax, not all of them do, but the ones they do, they collected about 20.8 million in taxes. So the idea, if the same group will do that and all of them go to 10%, which is not likely, nor is it immediate, it probably would move that number to about 66 million. So that's the bill in a nutshell.
Okay, thank you, Mazin. I think it's important to point out on the dash one amendment that the sharing with the county of the amount of the extra taxes allowed under this bill, the amount that goes to the county would only go to those counties that have opted into the cannabis program.
The counties that are allowed to receive distributions, that means they are not currently
out.
Correct. Okay, I think we will start with Senator Finley, who was good enough to introduce this bill, and let you make a few comments and perhaps introduce your mayor.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Madam Chair, members of the committee, my name is Lynn Finley. I'm the state senator for Senate District 30, which includes Malheur County and 9 other counties. This bill is at the request of the City of Ontario, who has opted into the marijuana program, and they are in a unique situation. They are the most unique situation of any city in Oregon. There's no other city that even comes close to their situation. The situation that the City of Ontario has is they are within 50 miles of 800,000 people that are in a state that they do not allow the sale of marijuana. So all of those 800,000 people, not all of them, a lot of them, drive over across the river into Oregon and partake in their purchase of marijuana. And last year, the estimate was the dispensaries in the city of marijuana sold about $100 million worth of product. This year, they're on track. I think last month, I believe they're about $10 million a month, so they'll be about $120 million. There's no other city that borders a state that doesn't sell marijuana other than Ontario. I mean, Washington legalizes marijuana, California legalizes marijuana. Ontario is the only city that faces this situation. And I've driven through Ontario on numerous occasions, and you drive by a dispensary nearly any time of the day or night, that any time of the day that they're open, and there's a line of people outside. And all these people are there for one reason, and that's the legal purchase of marijuana. And the impacts to the city is significant. So at the City of Ontario's request, and I'm gonna let Mayor Riley Hill, who's briefly writing notes like crazy, to explain where this is at and why we're doing what we're doing. This is a significant impact. I mean, at any given time, you can go to Ontario and the roads are jammed. They had a concert a year ago. They thought 25,000 people showed up for this concert. So it is a significant impact, and what they're trying to do is help offset some public safety issue. Some of the intent of the Dash 1 amendment, it was at the request of others, is that 20% of the proceeds would go to the county if the county qualified under ORS 475B-759, which means if the county opted in. This tax is capped at 10%. It's not mandatory that they go to 10%. It's whatever the city chooses to do. But it is, as Moslin said, it is a permissive tax. The only way this can go into effect is the voters of that municipality must, the municipality must pass an ordinance, and the voters must approve it in the ballot at the next general election. So I could ramble on forever, but I would much rather you heard Mayor Riley Hill from the City of Ontario, who lives and breathes with this every day. But I would happy to answer any questions at your point, at your leisure. So thank you, Madam Chair.
Mayor Hill. Mayor Hill,
I'm here, and I'm on, and thank you, Chairman Burdick and committee members, for listening to us. Senator Finley has made some of the points that I wanted to make, and because he lives close by, he knows what's going on here, and I can't say enough.
Mayor, could I ask you to introduce yourself for the record?
I'm sorry. Yes, this is Riley Hill from Ontario, Oregon. I've lived here for 50 years, and been serving as mayor for the last 2.5. So I don't think you need to know any more about me, but I'll tell you anything you want to know. I'm a building contractor, a has-been building contractor, and decided to do a little public service. I can't say enough how unique Ontario is, because we are on the Idaho border, and everything that happens in Idaho affects us, and it affects us over and over and over. And Ontario is the second largest retailer in the state. We're only a small town of 11,500 people, and Ontario sells 10% of the state's total sales, approaching $100 million, and probably this year we will exceed $100 million. Last year, I think it was $93 million. And 3% of $100 million sounds like a tub full of money. And it is, but it is not enough money to deal with the issues that we have here. The current average right now is about 1,500 additional cars on our streets per day because they buy and they leave. And our major thoroughfare into town is Idaho Avenue. When we have a shift change and when these cars come in every day, it plugs up Idaho Avenue and it plugs it up from down at the underpass. Ontario is separated by the railroad and then with the state by the Snake River. So the railroad goes through and we have an underpass there. And then on Fifth Street, we cross over the tracks. Well, the trains go through several times a day and they close that off for maybe 10 minutes each time it goes through. Then when we have traffic at the heavy traffic on Idaho, shift changes and these 1,500 cars that come in here a day, sometimes you can't get through. So that impacts our safety. We can't get police cars. We can't get ambulances. People can't get to the hospital. And on top of it, mutual aid. If we have to assist Fruitland or Fruitland assists us, both streets are jammed up. We can't get through. And this has just happened since we've got marijuana in town. And you know, we have a unique opportunity here to handle that. And right now, because of it, we are exploring a bridge, an overpass on Southeast 18th Avenue and across the river. And our estimates are about $150 million to put the overpass, another bridge across the Snake River. We met with ODOT and Idaho representatives earlier this week to push towards that. And $3 million a year doesn't do it for us. So what do we have to do? And the town's growing because of it. We have one enterprising dispensary owner, Smart too. He's putting in a 170-unit RV park right next to his dispensary. And I have no doubt that it will fill, and it will fill particularly on weekends, and it will fill on weekends, a three-day weekends and holidays. That will just create more traffic in that area. Currently, we have 9 dispensaries in town, and there are more on the horizon. And you would think that the more dispensaries we have, that sales would kind of stagnate, but that's not true. The more dispensaries we have, the more they sell. We just have more people come in and making the rounds for some reason. We want to be good partners with the state and our local and with our local dispensary owners. However, we need to cover our costs, and marijuana presents a unique opportunity for us to do that because the supermajority of the tax would be paid by Idahoans, because about 90% of our sales are to Idahoans, and so we would not be imposing much of a tax on our local people or on Ontario Oregonians. We have heard talk on how additional tax would affect small isolated communities such as Sumter and Huntington. The Huntington people are the ones that push to get it into Ontario. And it's a hollow argument because the city does not have to raise the tax on marijuana. They can just be happy with the 3% and continue on, and so no additional burden. But not only for our traffic and for public safety and infrastructure, Ontario has a major problem with homeless. We have 300 and slightly over 300 documented homeless people, 110 documented homeless students in the 8C school district. Our PERS debt is staggering, and we are the poorest county in the state. So we need help, and a marijuana tax, because you can spread it broadly or do whatever we want with it, would help us a lot. And in the end, if the legislature decides to help us, we must find the right balance on taxation with our voters, as the citizens will ultimately make the decision on what the proper amount of tax would be. If the citizens don't want to raise it, it won't be raised. So we'll put it to our voters and we'll find out what that balance is. And so I thank you for listening to us or listening to me. And if you have any questions, I'll try to answer them.
Thank you. And thank you about the education about Ontario. I've been there. It's a lovely town. And I've seen the issues. You literally look across the river to see Idaho from Ontario. And so I really appreciate your sharing some of what's happening on the ground with us who are here in the Valley and don't get enough opportunities to come out there and see for ourselves. Senator Riley has a question.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Not really a question. I just wanted to comment that I'll probably be look on this very favorable since he's probably one of my cousins, have Hill ancestors, and his first name's Riley. I suspect we may be cousins somewhere up the line. So I'll probably be very favorable to anything he wants to do.
Bless your heart.
We learn in this business, Riley, that we take our votes wherever we can get them. Okay, thank you again for coming. Our next witness will be Mark Garst from the League of Oregon. I'm going a little out of order here. I do have my reasons, but if Mark Garst is present here, I think I saw him on there. Mark, are you here? Yes, you are.
I am. Chair Burdick, members of the committee, Mark Garst with the League of Oregon Cities. Cities strongly support Senate Bill 864, and we very much appreciate Senator Finley, Representative Owens, and the chair for bringing this concept forward. With the passage of Measure 110, cities are going to lose a tremendous amount of revenue. As you're aware, Measure 110 legalized some street drugs, and then it reallocated state marijuana revenues to treatment, which is a great goal. The state imposes a 17% tax until the end of 2020. Cities and counties each receive 10% of that state marijuana tax, or 20% total. Under Measure 110, we're capped at the amount that we can receive, so we won't receive any growth that the market sees, and we'll split $2.25 million quarterly or $9 million annually. When you look at the latest revenue forecast from yesterday and run the numbers, and I've submitted some written testimony and you can see it there, we're gonna lose about $49.9 million in state marijuana revenue for the 21-23 biennium. This is a 73% reduction. The May forecast projects that there's gonna be $339 million plus in sales, less administrative costs. We would have each received 10%, so we would have gotten $67.9 million total for the biennium, and instead we'll get $18 million for the biennium. We certainly heard the voters when they passed Measure 110 that they wanted to see increased money going to drug treatment. But we're not sure that they were saying was that they wanted to see less city services and less county services. And what this bill would do is it would allow a local jurisdiction to put it to the voters to raise that local marijuana tax. And I think that, Masson's very prescient. I don't think that everybody's gonna go up to the 10%, but it would allow local voters to raise that local marijuana tax in order to fund local services. When marijuana was legalized, there was a system put in, and there was a distribution of funds that was agreed upon, and there was a preemption that was put on local governments. Well, the rules have changed now. That money is not going to local governments like it was going to before, and having that preemption at that same level of 3% no longer makes much sense. Even if cities were to go to that full 10%, we will still be well below our neighbors. If you look at Washington state, when you add up their marijuana excise tax, when you add up their general sales tax, their local sales taxes, taxes there can be as high as 45%. And we will still be at only 27% maximum. And again, I don't think that most cities are gonna go to that full number. California, similarly, when you add up all those taxes plus a local marijuana business tax that local governments are able to do, they can get up as high as 40%. In addition to that, they have a cultivator tax on growers that's not even included in that number. So Oregon is still gonna be on the low end of taxes even after this change, And for that reason, we think that some of the arguments that industry is making are a little hyperbolic, frankly. We've heard about the effect of this tax on local businesses, and we're so certainly sensitive to that. But this is a tax on consumers. It's not a tax on the business, and the business will be able to pass this tax through to their customers. Next, when the industry gives numbers on total tax rate that their businesses pay, the real problem is income taxes. They're not allowed to deduct normal business expenses because this drug is Schedule I narcotic, and so it's considered ill-gotten gains. They don't get to deduct some of these business expenses, and that is why their effective tax rate is so high. I was personally back in D.C. February of 2019 lobbying to get that changed. I think that those businesses should be able to deduct their regular business expenses. And with the current makeup of the federal legislature, I think that there's a very good chance that that's actually going to happen. We've also seen some numbers come out that, you know, that this will reduce demand so much that you'll actually see a net decrease in tax revenues. We don't agree with that. We think that you should look at unbiased academic studies, including studies by the University of Oregon, and those clearly demonstrate that when Washington made their change, they saw an increase in revenue, first of all. Secondly, the only place where I could ever talk about the Laffer curve is in the revenue committee. And the Laffer curve is that point at which raising taxes no longer generates revenue. These academic studies demonstrate that Washington is still below the peak of the Laffer curve on the left side of that curve. And certainly Oregon being well over 10% less than, you know, major jurisdictions in Washington will also be in that spot. So we're not convinced that some of these claims that are being made by industry economists will actually prove to be true. Finally, you know, we'll hear a lot about the black market. And I'll just say, you know, most literature about the black market is in cross-border sales, and this has nothing to do with that. Oregon has the problem that we're growing too much marijuana, and it's going out of state. That's an issue that we need to deal with, but that is not going, raising the local marijuana tax is not going to make any effect there. I think that the, you know, retailers are really not appreciating what a good job they've done. They have provided clean, well-lit stores that are, you know, great to go into. People can go and look at a variety of different products. And, you know, I don't think that folks are going to want to go back to meeting some guy in a park or an alley to do a black market drug deal to save a few bucks. I just don't see that happening. I think that those claims are a little out of hand. City, I will say there's a Dash One amendment and LOC is supportive. Not every city is supportive, and some of the cities that I've gotten to support it are doing it begrudgingly. But I think that the counties have a point. Most of these retail stores are located inside city limits. And so while the county has the ability to do a tax in unincorporated areas, they would not see a tremendous amount of benefit from this, while they will be losing a lot of money from Measure 110. So we do support the league, and most cities, I believe, support the Dash 1 amendment. The last thing I'll say is that city revenues are struggling right now. You know, we're going to get some ARPA funds, but those are one-time funds. We've lost money due to lodging taxes, gas taxes, park fees, parking fees. We could be looking at property tax losses if we see big jumps in commercial vacancy and real estate values go down. You know, we have a broken property tax system. We don't have the ability to make up these lost revenues by just simply raising property taxes. Measure 110 is really just going to make all of these problems worse. And for those reasons, cities really, really need Senate Bill 864. I would appreciate the support of everyone on the committee, and I thank you so much for your time.
Thank you very much. Are there questions for Mr. Garst? I see no questions, so we'll go to Ethan Nelson. I'm sorry, Mr. Chair.
Sorry, I was late. I was late with my little hand raise. So, yeah, thank you, Madam Chair. Just a question, and I'm new to this, the marijuana tax issue. I know that the chair here has just a little bit more knowledge than pretty much anyone else in the state on this. It seems like there's an issue around municipalities close to the border, especially our eastern border here, with what we just heard from testimony. Since ID is required for purchase, would it be possible to have an additional out-of-state assessment on purchases for folks that don't carry. I see Senator Finley shaking his head because border region issues. So I'm not sure who to direct this question to, but I would be just curious in terms of taxation if there'd be the possibility of being able to catch some of that Idaho revenue, you know, coming across. We often hear about the, you know, jobs and people shopping across the border. What about trying to get Idahoans that are coming into our state to buy a particular product to have them pay a little bit more for something that they don't sell?
I'll put on my former chair of Judiciary Committee hat on this one, and it would be unconstitutional to do that. It would be a violation of the Interstate Commerce Clause. And believe me, we've thought of it.
And then, Madam Chair, my only second comment here, if I may, just is, I think the comment was legalize street drugs was what Measure 110 did for Mr. Garson. I believe it was decriminalization. So if you just in the future, that might be something just for consideration when you're testifying before a legislative committee. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you for pointing that out. I caught that as well. So a little education going on today. Okay, are there other questions? I see no other questions, and so I'll call on Ethan Nelson from the City of Eugene.
Great. Thank you, Chair Burdick, and members of the committee. Ethan Nelson, I'm the Intergovernmental Relations Manager for the City of Eugene, and we're here testifying on 864. Thank you, Senator Finley, Chair Burdick, and also Representative Owens for bringing this bill forward. The City of Eugene is supportive of the base bill. I'm going to not reiterate everything that Mark said. He hit many of the issues directly. I would like to share with you Eugene's experience, though. So under Measure 110, we were on track to receive roughly $1.3 million in state-shared marijuana tax revenues receipts for fiscal year 21, and that was up from about $1 million the year before. That revenue is placed within the city's general fund, which, as many of you, as you know, provides the funding for public safety, our community court, park safety and security, library and recreation programs, homeless shelter programs, climate actions, and land use planning, to name a few of the critical services in our community. Based on our projections, we estimate that the $1.3 million will be reduced to roughly $200,000 per year going forward. We are currently working through our budget forecast for FY22, and with an assumption that we will need to account for about $1 million annual hit to our general fund. So this bill is not a bill that dives into the merits or challenges of Measure 110. Rather, it's a bill that allows local governments to propose the appropriate tax rate for recreational marijuana sales that will provide funding for the services which our community continues to expect from the city and call on for a regular basis. We support the proposal to increase the local tax rate up to 10%. It is permissive. It goes to the voters, and there's then the local control of that for a revenue source. But as you can see, SB 864 base bill would help the City of Eugene to fill a large budget gap that is very much needed. However, the City of Eugene is strongly opposed to the Dash 1 amendment that would create a mandatory distribution from a city's local revenues on recreational marijuana taxes to counties. And so Mr. Garst identified that. To the best of our knowledge, there is no other situation where the City of Eugene levies a local tax on businesses and then makes a payment to Lane County. We do not believe that an increase to our local retail marijuana tax should be any different. In addition to this, we are concerned about how the Dash 1 amendment is written. While the City of Eugene is responsible before the Eugene voters to understand what those increased revenues would be used for, as written, the Dash 1 amendment does not require any sideboards on how a payment to a county would be managed, expended, or reported on. And as written, the, quote, at least 20%, unquote, language is vague. Clarifying what entity will determine the percentage of any payment is critical to building and maintaining the public trust. So thank you for your time. We ask that you pass the base bill, but that you do not pass the Dash 1 amendments. We are strongly opposed. Thank you. I'm available for questions.
Thank you. Are you aware, I assume that Lane County is an opt-in county?
My understanding is that Lane County, as under the base bill, has opted in for assessing those sales on that tax on retail sales within the county. And like this bill, it does not mean that, I mean, count, it's really a market mechanism. If there's retail sales that find themselves within a city's jurisdiction rather than a county's jurisdiction, that's the nature of it.
Okay, no, I was that was a different question. Okay, thank you. Are there other questions? Senator Wagner, your hand is still up. Did you still have a question? Okay, his hand is down. All right, we will move on to our next witness, Alex Kyler from Lane County.
Good afternoon, Chair Burdick and members of the committee. Thank you for having me here today. For the record, I'm Alex Kyler. I'm Lane County's Intergovernmental Relations Manager, here today in support of Senate Bill 864 and in support of the Dash One Amendment. We are, Chair Burdick, an opt-in county. We did pass the local tax via our voters back when recreational marijuana was implemented and there were windows to do all those kinds of things. Interestingly, when we were posing that question to the voters, our assumption actually was that because residents who live inside the city of Eugene or any city in Lane County are residents of the county, our assumption was actually that tax revenue that, or the tax measure that we were imposing or asking the voters to approve would actually apply inside cities. And in fact, it did not. And so there's a huge delta between the number of retailers that are inside cities versus what those that have chosen to locate outside of any city in Lane County. I mean, I think we have at any given time about five or so retailers that are in the county, and probably between the Eugene Springfield area, there's, oh, I don't know, I would say 40 to 50 retailers. And so the delta between the revenue that the county is able to earn from this opportunity versus what the cities are able to earn is really pretty remarkable. It's huge. I mean, the city of Eugene takes in just over $1 million a year in that tax, and Lane County, we're lucky if we can hit $50,000. The issue that I wanted to bring to your attention, of course, is that counties are the public health authority, and so we do provide public health services to all residents of the county, whether they live inside of a city or not. And our public health program, which has quite a few staff that work just on prevention measures, do quite a bit of work with respect to marijuana issues. So, for example, we continue to work on the Indoor Clean Act, Clean Air Act, and making sure that retailers understand that while marijuana consumption at businesses is illegal, it does occur, and we continue to work on campaigns to make sure that those laws are enforced. We work with all kinds of different partners locally around impaired driving. And we would love to be able to have enough revenue for our sheriff to actually hire driving while impaired specialists, those drug detection specialists. And we continue to work on epidemiology for the community to sort of look at what the actual data says about consumption and how to address the impacts of its use in our city, particularly with respect to our youth. So we're providing an enormous amount of service to city residents and getting nothing in return. And while I appreciate that Ethan described that there are no taxes inside the city of Eugene where a business shares its revenue, where the city shares a business tax revenue with the county, The opposite is not true, which is that the city just imposed a tax on folks who work inside the city. And so there are plenty of county residents who are actually paying a tax now into the city of Eugene. So we really saw some flaws with how the marijuana local taxation was implemented. I'm hesitant to say that, Senator. I know, you know, you were involved with a lot of that work, and there were many people who were involved with it. But the limit on being able to tax only where those retailers are located in unincorporated areas just really put us at a big disadvantage relative to our role as a public health authority. And that's why we really support the Dash One Amendment. We've been working on that, actually, that concept for a couple sessions with others to try to figure out how there could be better sharing of those revenues amongst the various entities. So really appreciate your support for that amendment. Thank you.
Thank you. And initially, the taxes in the ballot measure initially was a grower's tax. And I'm assuming that you have a fair number of growers in Lane County. Is that correct, outside the city?
Well, we certainly did. I don't know what those numbers are now. We see, I would say, more and more indoor grows, and I think many of those are located inside city limits. But you're right. There's definitely we saw quite a bit of hemp in the early days being grown in the county.
Okay. Are there other questions from the committee? Thank you very much.
Thank you.
We will take Tyler Jansen.
Chair Burdick, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Tyler Jansen. I'm here today on behalf of the Association of Oregon Counties in support of Senate Bill 864 with the Dash One Amendment. And I want to say thank you to my colleague Mark Garst over at LOC for working with us on that. I'll be brief. The reason that we're here today and the reason that we need to have this conversation now is that two things are true at the same time. One is that, as has been said, the impacts of ballot measure 110 are landing like a thud at the exact same time that there has been a significant proliferation in illegal activity as it relates to marijuana. And we've talked, we've gone from Eastern Oregon, we've talked about Lane County. I want to take us to Southern Oregon and Jackson County for just a moment, because I received some very staggering statistics from them this morning. First off, their hit for measure 110, Jackson County is slated over the next biennium to take a $4.3 million hit to their marijuana revenues under measure 91. That's going to have a very direct impact on their enforcement activities. In the past 5 months, Jackson County code enforcement has received more complaints for marijuana activity than they have in any year prior. They have just 3 code enforcement officers and 1 office assistant. Each of those officers is balancing right now about 320 active investigations. So there are revenues. They simply just aren't adequate to keep up with public safety and public health costs, and hence the reason for this bill. I want to also mention that when we've heard this discussion before, there's a lot of talk about if this rate goes up, people are going to leave to the black market. And I think that's a spurious argument for a few reasons. Number one, as has been said before by Mayor Hill and others, this is optional. It's entirely optional. It's going to be up to the locals to decide what the correct amount of taxation would be. You know, the other thing that I would submit is that the illegal dealers aren't paying their share of taxes right now. So I think if we could have adequate revenue to go after that black market, that's going to spur more people to go into the licensed dispensaries. So I would hope that that industry would partner with us in trying to shut down their competitors. The other thing that I'll mention is, as Mark Garst and others have said, there are a lot of first-time users of marijuana products, and they are getting their products by walking into these well-lit, nice stores, having a very pleasant retail experience. I don't think that some of those first-timers who that's their first experience with this product are suddenly going to seek out a black marketplace product. With those pieces in mind, again, I am here and I urge your support of Senate Bill 864 with the Dash 1 amendment.
Thank you. Questions from the committee? I see no questions. So we started this hearing with Ontario and we will end with Ontario. Adam Brown.
Thank you, Madam Chair Burdick and the Senate Committee on Finance and Revenue. My name is Adam Brown. I'm the city manager of Ontario, Oregon. I'm speaking in support of Senate Bill 864 at the direction of the Ontario City Council. We are requesting your support for Senate Bill 864. As a pioneer in this country for marijuana legalization, price setting in the form of taxes was a grand experiment. After over 5 years of history, though, now, and having the benefit of our own state's experience and other states who have ratified the legalization of marijuana, we now have more information to go on. What our credible institutes of higher learning have found is that we are on the lower end of the taxation spectrum for marijuana. Furthermore, our own outstanding University of Oregon, as well as other universities across the nation, have published research on the inelastic nature of price on the demand for marijuana. In other words, price does not impact the demand for marijuana. What we like about this legislation is that municipalities have a choice. It's not a one-size-all-fits piece of legislation. This choice will force city governments to work with their citizens and dispensary owners to determine the appropriate amount of taxation to meet the specific community's unique needs. For instance, our small city has a growing homeless population that you heard Mayor Hill talk about. Our most recent count showed over 300 homeless individuals in our community. Over 100 of them are students in our Ontario school district. We are importing homeless persons from Idaho because Oregon, frankly, offers better services for people experiencing homelessness. Shelter services for persons experiencing homelessness, however, are not provided by the state. They are provided at a local level. We're actively engaged in finding an answer, but we've not found any answers that don't require money. We've participated in offering 16 small temporary winter shelters for families with children, the elderly, and veterans over the last 2 years. But we only have the funding to run them through for the winter months. We have a much larger population that we do not have an answer for yet, which this is a mode to fund an answer. The City of Ontario is already exporting $1.6 million in local revenue sharing to the rest of the state. It's being collected here in Ontario, in the county with the poorest median household income in the state, and redistributed to cities across the state in a far better position than us. Of the over $1.6 million we collected for local revenue sharing, approximately $65,000 was returned to our city. And then to add insult to injury, Ontario's meager share was cut with all other cities as a result of ballot measure 110. This local option tax would restore the lost revenue from Measure 110, not only for Ontario, but also for the communities across the state. Every municipality in the state already has a different property tax, along with non-coterminous and coterminous special districts that create a panoply of taxing combinations. A patchwork of taxation is not a new challenge and serves to only highlight the unique natures of each individual community. Ontario is trying to make a difference in the short time we have before all of this may be irrelevant for our community in Eastern Oregon. Once legalization is spread nationwide or state by state, this will not be of any relevance to us. In the interim, we have used the revenue to pay down our PERS debt by over $4 million and invest in our infrastructure so that we are a more resilient community when and if broader legalization occurs. And so we would appreciate your support on this bill. And thank you for your time, Madam Chair, and members of the committee for hearing our testimony on Senate Bill 864.
Thank you. Are there questions from the committee? I see no questions, and that concludes our witness list, and we will take up this bill at a later time. So thank you, and I will close the public hearing on Senate Bill 864 and open a public hearing on Senate Bill 25.
Yes, Madam Chair, members of the committee, Senate Bill 25 comes to you from the Secretary of State office. And this has to deal with a basic mechanism of funding for the Secretary of State. The way it works today is that the Secretary of State collects a number of different business registry. And those business registry fees are set at different levels. There are primarily three main levels of these registries. Nonprofits of different types and different kinds pay about $50. Business corporations and for-profit businesses pay $100, and those are Oregon businesses. And out of Oregon business, they pay about $275. Now, out of these fees, the law allows the Secretary of State to keep $20 for each transaction that they process to pay for the costs of doing business, basically for the business registry and the in the corporation division. Now, the original bill basically increases that $20 per transaction to about $25 per transaction or per filing. And that basically is a solution that was proposed in order to start and expand the ability of the Secretary of State Corporation Division to pay for their costs. Basically, they're starting to bump against the $20 ceiling that is in law today. So that is the original bill. However, the Dash One Amendment basically tries to do another model of doing that funding mechanism. And that new model or different way of doing it basically allows the Secretary of State to deduct their costs as specified through the budget process, through the Ways and Means budget process, and also to keep an amount that is equivalent to a reasonable reserve through also the budget process as it works. And in that way, it basically opens the whole amount for the recovery of costs from the Secretary of State to come in the picture of all the revenues that are coming in. And after all that is paid for, basically the amounts that are extra above the cost, those are general fund transfers. And those become part of the general fund amounts. Today, we talk about, in a biennial kind of sense, about $68-69 million transfers to the general fund from these transactions that the Secretary of State does for corporations. If, for example, that $20 is the ceiling that they look at today, the expectation under the cash flow model that the Secretary of State have shared with us, that they would come to about $2 million short of paying for their costs. So that's the genesis of this bill and the Dash One amendment in front of you.
Okay, thank you. And we will be focusing on the Dash One amendment. So we have three people from the Secretary of State, Cheryl Myers, Jeff Morgan, and Michael Hickam. I don't know how many want to testify and how many are there to answer questions. So we will start with Cheryl Myers. But before we do, Senator Finley, did you have a question?
I do. Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm trying to decide whether this is revenue raising or not revenue raising, or if it's just movement of money. Has there been an opinion on that? Is it, if it's increasing revenue to the state, does this require a 3/5 vote, or is it just a bookkeeping issue we're dealing with?
This Senator Friendly doesn't bring any new money. It doesn't change the rate, or it does not levy any new amounts. This basically, whether the it deals with the net transfers after costs. So this would primarily be the way you would fund state agencies.
Okay. I think that answers the question. Let's start with Cheryl Myers.
Good afternoon, Chair Burdick, Vice Chair Boquist, and members of the committee. For the record, my name is Cheryl Myers. I use she, her pronouns, and I have the honor of serving as the Deputy Secretary of State and Tribal Liaison. I'd like to thank the committee for considering Senate Bill 25 with the Dash One amendment today. This bill is a thoughtful solution to an ongoing budgetary issue for our agency's corporation division, and we're excited at the possibility to enact this long-term stable fix, which will significantly reduce staff workload, provide budget stability to the division, and continue to support the general fund. I'm very pleased to introduce our Business Services Director in the Secretary of State's office, Jeff Morgan, and our Chief Budget Officer and Financial Services Manager, Michael Hickam, who will provide the background information and more details about why this bill is needed, how it will work. Thank you again for your time and consideration today. And with that, I'll turn now to Director Morton.
Okay, Jeff Morgan, you're on next, followed by Michael Hickam.
Thank you, Deputy Myers, Chair Burdick, members of the committee. My name is Jeff Morgan. I'm the Director of the Business Services Division and been in that role since 2004, so I have a good history with this. So I will give you some historical perspective of where we're coming from and where we're hoping to go. As Mr. Mazin mentioned, the Corporation Division collects three levels of fees right now, currently on the current model, $50 for nonprofit in-state businesses, $100 for for-profit businesses in-state, and $275 for out-of-state businesses. We retain $20 of each of those fees, and the rest goes to the legislature. So we've been living on the $20 fee since 1999. And the fee originally from that point up to about 2004 was $20. In 2004, the fee was increased to $50 for registrations. And out of that $50, the Secretary of State retained $20, and $30 went to the legislature. And we were transferring roughly over a biennium, roughly 20, 22 million a biennium. And we do a 1 year fiscal year end transfer, keeping 2 months of operating cash on hand and sending the balance to the general fund, which was roughly a little over 1 million per fiscal year.
in 2010, ballot measure 67 changed the fee structure again. And that's when we went to the model we're under right now, $50 for nonprofit, $100 for for-profit, and $275 for out-of-state. So we retain $20. The balance goes to the general fund, and that increased the transfer significantly to the general fund, up to $64-65 million initially, and probably over $70 million in the last biennium. In 2017, the late Secretary of State Dennis Richardson submitted a request to increase our share of the fees by $5. But through some budget adjustments and changes, we were able to make do with what we had, with the message that we would most likely be back in the future. And that's where we find ourselves today, not being able to live on the $20 for the business registrations. And while the corporation division at one point, they've been reduced by 10 FTE over the years, technology has enabled them to do the great work that they do and the great service for those that do business in the state of Oregon. And there are prices as well to keep that technology update current and updated. So also in 2000, now we're coming to present day where Secretary Clarno is the one who introduced the original bill to increase our share of $5 to $25. That would have generated roughly $3.8 million for us. And as you all would probably equate, if you're mathematicians, you would view that as a 3.8 less coming to the general fund. So I'm happy to say, and I'm going to move on to our financial officer, our chief budget officer, Mike Hickam, retired Air Force, 25 years in the Air Force, was a CFO for Arkansas Air Force Base. And he came up with this new solution that is the Dash One Amendment. And I will say it's simple and it works well. And to Senator Finley's questions about the transfers to the general fund, under the current model, we retain all the excess cash that we have on hand. So of the funds we transfer, if we add excess cash, we keep it, we're able to keep it. And the way the legislature has been able to get that excess cash is through a fund sweep, which only happens through a legislative action. Under this model, we keep 2 to 3 months operating, and the balance always goes to the general fund. So we are not building up excess cash. You get it as we receive it, which we think the legislature would like that. With that, that completes my portion of this presentation. And if there are no questions, I'd like to turn it over and introduce you to Mike Hickam.
Okay, we'll hold questions till the completion of the panel. So Michael Hickam is next.
Thank you, Director Morgan, Chair Burdick, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Mike Hickam, and I'm the Chief Budget Officer and Financial Services Manager for the Secretary of State. The solution that we're proposing for the Dash One Amendment would have the Corporation Division retain 2 months of operating funds and transfer the excess cash monthly to the general fund. This would require a change to the ORS 56140, a change to the statutory text, changing it to after deducting and depositing to the operating account the expenses of carrying out the functions and duties of the Secretary of State relating to business registry and an amount necessary to maintain a reasonable reserve into the general fund. To give an example of what Director Morgan was talking about earlier with the revenue transfers, if we look at our 17-19 budget, we transferred $73.5 million to the general fund from Corporations Division. If the Dash 1 was in effect, we would have transferred $75.4 million. Again, this biennium through the end of April, we've transferred $74.9 million. With the Dash 1 in effect, we would have transferred $77.8. So what that does is it helps LFO, it helps the legislature from having to do a sweep at the end of the biennium to remove excess cash that the Corporation Division has earned throughout the biennium, and it automatically allows us to transfer that cash through the biennium as we move month to month. Some benefits of going to this route, it would increase the money going to the general fund based on retroactive projections without having to take legislative actions through a fund sweep. It will provide long-term stability to the division budget. So even if we asked for an increase from $20 per transaction to say 25, at some point in the future, just through inflation, that extra $5 is going to be enough, and we're going to have to come back again. So this would eliminate that. It would allow us to operate at the level the Ways and Means and the legislature ends up approving our budget for. That's all we're asking to keep. It would eliminate the complicated and time-consuming monthly reconciliation process and make the division solely subject to the expenditure limitations set by Ways and Means. So it's a time-consuming process every single month between the accounting staff and the corporations division to reconcile how many different registrations we receive that month and how much money corporations division keeps and how much goes to the general fund. Whereas with the dash one in effect, we would be able to easily look at our cash balance, know what our 2 month operating is, and transfer anything above that. One challenge that could appear in the future is if business filings were to decrease, it could impact the revenues transferred to the general fund. However, I will point out that revenues have remained steady. Even through the 2008 recession and through this pandemic, we've actually exceeded what our estimated revenues were going to be. So we don't see that as a huge challenge, but it is a possibility if things were to decrease. We would transfer less money than estimated to the general fund. However, on the other side of that, we also would not have to come back if we maintain status quo. In that aspect, we would have to come back and ask for an infusion of cash in order to cover our operating, because we still wouldn't bring enough into corporation division, and that would prevent this. If there are no questions, that is all I have for my testimony. Thank you.
Okay, I do have a question. The the $20 ceiling puts a sideboard on how much you can spend. And what I heard you saying is that you will go through the Ways and Means process to replace basically that sideboard with a sideboard that the Ways and Means Committee puts on you.
Senator Burdick, members of the committee, that is correct. So we would actually only be able to keep the limitation that the legislature approves in our budget. We wouldn't be able to maintain anything more than that. The rest of it would go to the general fund.
Okay, Senator Boquist.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I actually just have a question of staff, because what it really sounds like is we're just going to put it in the Ways and Means. This must have a referral to Ways and Means Committee.
Well, that's what we'll be looking at. I assume there will be a fiscal on this, in which case it would go most likely to the Ways and Means Committee, but we don't have a fiscal yet because we have not scheduled a work session on the dash one. Is that correct, Mazin?
Yes, Madam Chair, and also we've touched base with fiscal, and they expressed the need to have it go to Ways and Means.
Right. And just so you know, I have discussed this with the co-chairs of the Ways and Means Committee, and that conversation went pretty well. Otherwise, we would not be having this hearing. Okay, are there other questions? All right. Thank you very much. I will close the public hearing on Senate Bill 25. And Chris, if we have any more business that we need to take care of?
That was your agenda for the day, Madam Chair.
Okay. And again, I apologize for the technological delay. I hope I learned from this experience so it doesn't happen again. So thank you. And everyone have a nice weekend. And we are adjourned.